This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 1st of June, 2022, and therefore the first day of quantitative tightening in the U.S. The market doesn't seem particularly afraid. We did see the market rolling over a little bit after that torrid squeeze. But a pretty choppy session because while we were a bit lower, I think in part on the big jump in crude oil prices, as well as U.S. yields coming back in higher after those Waller comments, saw the market pricing the terminal rate for the end of this year several basis points higher. We had a huge sell-off in crude oil linked to a story about OPEC potentially essentially booting Russia out of the picture here in terms of the quotas. Let's just go straight to you on that, because I think it's a key story, and it was a key story yesterday for sure, and a very large move intraday in the crude oil market. What's your take on this headline, first of all, and does it mean anything, do you think, in terms of supplies in the coming 2, 3, 4 months?
Well, I think, first of all, it's probably more signal value than anything, John. And the initial result was that the price of Brent went straight back down to test that key, which is now key support in the 115 area. Russia clearly is struggling to keep up its production levels. So it basically means it's really quite meaningless for them to be part of the deal right now. But at the same time, there's also obviously a lot of politics going on behind the closed doors, because we've seen now for months that these OPEC meetings have been irrelevant because they haven't really addressed the elephant, as I say, in the room, which has been Russia and the war in Ukraine. Seems like they're doing it now. And I think what really behind it is the fact that we've seen the very, very high prices recently, almost a doubling this year. OPEC can control prices when they go up, but they're always struggling to control prices when they go down. Because that basically means they have to cut production. So I think they are trying to preempt the risk of a slowdown in global demand as growth starts to slow. And that I think that's why they're sending the signal. The question is really whether Saudi Arabia and UAE, which are really the only two countries left with some spare capacity, whether they have what kind of spare capacity they actually have and what kind of impact it will have. So I think initially, if it is carried out, we'll know by tomorrow when the OPEC Plus meets, or maybe even today if there's a statement. The question is really whether this is more just a signal value to the market than actual additional barrels flowing into the market.
All right, that's a huge bar there on Brent crude, as you show on slide 6. We'll get back to that in a while with the further talk on commodities. For now, so a choppy session, essentially unchanged on the day in terms of the NASDAQ 100. Peter, you've brought up this 13,000 level for good reason on the NASDAQ 100 as a key resistance level. The NASDAQ 100 has respected so far that prior major low sequence there in February, March, which was around 13,000 level. It's also a Fibonacci retracement area just ahead of that. So we are turning a little bit lower, and I can't help but link this to the comeback in yields. Pretty strong here. We're trading 287 basis points, and we've got some U.S. data I'll talk about in a moment, but I'm looking at whether we've seen a significant pivot back to the upside in yields. And I have to imagine that has to be one of the key things on the radar for equity traders here, which is when it's essentially rather quiet season for earnings.
Yeah, so we had a choppy session yesterday, as you said. The 13,000 level were the one we were looking at, and we couldn't extend momentum from Friday, and we closed below that strong Friday's close, and this morning we are a little bit back and forth. We have been lower than yesterday's close, and now we're a little bit higher. Oil is coming down. I think that's helping a little bit on the margin here for technology stocks. So the interest rate situation that you just mentioned in the U.S., it looks like we are turning higher again. So that would obviously be negative for technology stocks. So we'll have to watch. I think the underlying dynamics generally haven't really changed. So I still believe that what we just saw over the past week is a bear market rally. I don't think we are over with this current cycle. I've put in on slide 2 last month's performance across our theme baskets. So despite very little enthusiasm overnight in China regarding the apparent reopening, at least to some degree in Shanghai, was not followed through in the equity market with any enthusiasm. But for the month overall, you can see China's little giants were up 13%. I think this really shows you that, some of these policies that the Chinese government has implemented to restore economic growth and ensure a private sector growth is filtering through at least to the smaller cap companies, which are the ones that are in this China's little giant. So worth noting that. And then semiconductors had a comeback month together with energy storage and renewable energy and in the rock bottom bubble stock, cybersecurity and crypto, obviously, together with other tech baskets were redound. So pretty big diversion there for the month. And one of the things as well we can say when we have closed the month is that we have a monthly update on fundamentals on equity indices, so earnings, cash flows, revenue, etc. And based on that, we can update our MSCI World Index valuation model that where we look at across seven different metrics. And we had an unchanged MSCI World Index in dollar terms for May. And as a result, the valuation picture is the same as it was a month ago. We are still a half a standard deviation expensive. I've said before that, you know, given the backdrop that we have and the outlook ahead of us, we should at least go back to average equity valuations. So that means that just from a fundamental perspective, we have 5 to 10% decline from current levels. And then beyond that level would be, you know, a more dire situation for whatever reasons on the macro side or a liquidity / technical sell-off. Remember yesterday on the podcast, we talked about the VIX forward curve hasn't really inverted yet. And that's a sign that we haven't reached that capitulation level, which typically signifies some type of liquidity technical sell-off in a very brutal fashion. So I think we're still waiting for that to call any type of bottom in this current equity cycle.
Yeah, and you mentioned the MSCI being unchanged in dollar terms, well, the dollar is unchanged in dollar terms, more or less, for the month of May. So looking at how the month of May developed, if you want to do a really brief recap inspired by your thought that we are rolling over to this new month, the May 4th FOMC meeting was absolutely key for the short-term Fed tightening anticipation topping out development when Powell pushed out back against the 75 basis point rate hike idea. May 9th, we saw the 10-year peak and rolling over rather sharply there. And May 13th was when the dollar rolled over. If I have all those ducks lined up, I think that's approximately the dates within a day of each of those developments. And now we have the U.S. 10-year and the U.S. short rates really as well, sort of rejecting that recent low in yields. And I think it's really interesting to look at yesterday's data as sort of, you know, shaking up the narrative a little bit, at least on the idea that we're seeing a consistent pattern and weaker economic data out of the U.S. because we saw the consumer confidence reading for May out far stronger than expected. It did dip a little bit further, 106.4 versus 108.6 from April, but the expected was a 103.6, so far better than expectations. And then we had a Chicago PMI, one of these regional manufacturing surveys, and really manufacturing is not the dominant focus in the U.S. anyway, but a very strong 60.3, way better than expected, and far better than some of the terrible readings in the other regional surveys, leads you to believe that we might see a solid ISM manufacturing today. And it is a bit stale data, but we get this official home price update up 21.2% year on year in March, the largest gain ever in the U.S. housing market. And it is not a crazy hyper-leveraged housing market as it was back in the housing bubble of 2005 and 7, even though the price gains are more rapid. So yeah, interesting data points there. And I'm just really curious how the rest of the data, especially the Friday jobs and especially earnings, shapes up in ISM services for whether we're getting a stronger turn higher in yields here, especially at the longer end, because I think that's going to sweep across markets with the implications there, whether it's the dollar, whether it's, of course, yields and themselves, and whether it's risk sentiment per se. And just further on the matter, I charted the consumer confidence on slide 4. You can see that Bloomberg chart. It's the black line with the fill below it. And you can see we have turned lower. Of course, this is nothing like some of the surveys elsewhere. Clearly, there's no inflation-related questions in this survey. Generally, very associated with the jobs market, and I show that in blue, and it's just to show that these often roll over together, the unemployment rate and confidence in the past, so very, very coincident indicators. Sometimes the one leads a little bit the other. This time, the jobs market is still very clearly very strong, and apropos that, we have, of course, the latest jobs data. We have seen some of the claims picking up just a little bit, but it's still at historically low levels, and then we have the ADP payrolls tomorrow. And the JOLTS job openings today, which I think are going to continue to show that it's very difficult not to be able to find a job in the U.S. And then briefly to round out the FX space, look on slide 5. With this return higher in yields, you're seeing the yen falling and falling rapidly. We're at 129.5. It almost seems to be leading. It seems like we could make a new high in dollar yen without making a new high in the U.S. 10-year yield, for example. So quite interesting to watch there. And it just mounts the pressure, I think, on the Bank of Japan on its policy. You see the momentum really picking up to the downside for the Japanese yen on the FX board on slide 5. Dollar, of course, the question mark is whether it's turning here. And then something like the Canadian dollar, very interesting to watch, trading near the 200-day moving average. It's kind of reversed the entire sequence higher in that attempt above the 129 plus long-term range resistance, much less 130. But there's been no real adjustment in the Bank of Canada outlook relative to the Fed outlook. There's no yield spread development there. It's been about the strong advance of crude oil prices and a decent comeback in risk sentiment. So just curious as a test today, if the Bank of Canada doesn't deliver anything beyond what's currently expected in guidance, has it overshot a little bit here, dollar Canada to the downside? And then Ola, in your space, just I put big red arrows pointing out the weakness in gold and silver. I guess gold spooked by especially the rates come back. It's just not looking pretty for gold bulls here.
No, and we have this, which is most certainly now a hard ceiling at 1870, which we failed to break. That was the minimum level that we needed to retrace back above in order to attract some additional buying from and also short covering. That failed. So now, as you mentioned, with the yields picking poking high again, with QT coming online, with some of the data, economic data just being better than expected, thereby lowering the risk of a policy mistake as they hike rates. That's all just adding to some of the negativity we've seen again. So we're back below the 200-day moving average, and yeah, back to the drawing board. It is a range-bound market right now, and one where the sentiment is still somewhat fragile.
And speaking of sentiment, and speaking of price drops that are, well, this time more promising, I think, at least for the global food situation, we have this huge drop in wheat yesterday. Take us through what happened there.
Yeah, this is one of the areas where obviously we get a smile on our face when we actually see negative price action. We did see, as you say, quite a big drop in wheat in Chicago yesterday. Part of that was a follow-up. The market was closed on Monday. But we saw in Europe as well, we were down 3.5% yesterday. And it is the continued talk, as we also highlighted yesterday, that about the prospect for Putin allowing a corridor being opened so Ukraine can ship some of its excess grains into the market before the harvest in a few months' time. But I think at the same time, we also just have to look elsewhere what's going on. Slightly improvement in weather in Europe, but stateside, we still have the wheat condition at the worst level in 16 years. We have the slowest planting progress on record, even though it did pick up last week. So the outlook for the production in US this year is still not that promising. At the same time, we have some early monsoon rain in India, which has alleviated some of the heat wave pressure that we saw there recently. So just a mixed bag right now. But most certainly, the 25 million tons of grain that apparently is stuck in silos in Ukraine, that is really the key right now. If that can get released, then we could have a significantly lower prices.
Okay, and we're hoping also for natural gas prices and energy prices in general to fall here in Europe. They seem to be at the lower end of the range here. I don't know what the prospects are. They're going to see a solid breakthrough to the downside here. But what's the latest?
Yeah, the market tried to move higher earlier this week on the assumption that Russia would cut off supplies to additional European users. And that happened yesterday. Ørsted here in Denmark was cut off as expected. And also a utility in Holland saw their supplies being cut off because they refused to pay for the gas in rubles. But the market seems to have been preempting this. Also, just take a look at slide 8. You can see the gas storage refilling is going on it's probably getting close to a record pace right now, and that basically means it's happening at the correct time of the year, or lucky time of the year, because demand for gas obviously at this time is dwindling in Europe, because we don't have the same kind of in the US and elsewhere, the demand for cooling from air conditioning. So we don't have the same kind of electricity usage during the summer period. So it looks like we are being allowed to to drift lower. Also an expectation that Russia, that there's not really many customers left in Europe where there's any uncertainty left with regards to whether or not they're going to accept the gas for ruble decree from Putin.
All right. And then back to the equity market, Peter, I said, you know, you've done a good job of outlining the backdrop here, and we're all watching for whether we're seeing a shift back lower just in the broad brush. But any specific names you're looking at here as we look at the sessions ahead?
Yeah, I mean, today is a more quiet day because we are looking ahead for tomorrow's earnings from Meituan and Lululemon, two big companies in their respective industries. But today I've highlighted, as you can see on slide 9, four names in blue. So minor important, obviously important for the companies themselves, but they could have a little bit give a little bit of color and impact on the technology sector. So MongoDB, UiPath, Elastic, and Weibo. And the first three names, MongoDB, UiPath, and Elastic, I think all three have been part of our bubble baskets, if they are not still already. I'm zooming in on MongoDB here on the slide. You can see the share price been clubbed more than 50%. MongoDB was initially part of the first wave of the interest rate sensitivity sell-off that happened in the early parts of 2021, which marked the high point in mid-February for ARK Invest and that part of, you know, very speculative innovation companies. MongoDB was part of the cohort, despite being minor, was part of that cohort of more quality companies, or at least part of the technology sector that was not going down endlessly from that high point in February last year. And so MongoDB took it all the way to the highs in November and has been down ever since. I think the real test here for MongoDB is that if you look at the forward revenue expectations relative to the current enterprise value, so that is the market value of the equity plus the net debt, so growth debt minus cash and equivalents. If you look at that ratio, it's around 13 times. That's still a lot. It's still more than twice the level for the entire technology, speculative technology sector in that stable period from 12 to around the end of 2016 before everything took off massively. So I think this is going to be a real test today for MongoDB, testing this idea that we also saw yesterday with Salesforce, that despite cutting the revenue outlook, Salesforce slightly, they increased their earnings per share outlook for the current fiscal year, and they were rewarded by a 9% gain, Salesforce. And I think it's the same thing here with MongoDB. The market has shifted. That's also what Benchmark Capital and Sequoia Capital have recently said in their statements. The market is no longer rewarding revenue growth. It's about return on investor capital, cost cutting, preservation of capital. And I think that's the test that MongoDB is going to try to pass tonight, although I'm a little bit worried that they can't, but we'll see.
Interesting one to watch for sure. All right, let's look at what's interesting to watch. In the macro calendar today, we have that Bank of Canada decision up today. You can see the overview on slide 10. The 50 basis point hike to 1.5% expected. Again, the Fed expected to play some catch up, and which we call where we end this year in terms of the rates, it should be approximately on par according to market expectations, around 2.75%. U.S. ISM manufacturing, not the biggest mover of markets, and it's really more important to look at the services side anyway in the U.S., but we'll be watching that one. It's expected to recede back to 54.5. The Chicago PMI, I think, has changed the potentiality there for the expectations mix on that number. And then those JOLTS job openings, you know, they've been advancing to massive records. To talk about any significant weakness in the labor market, we need to see this rolling over on the scale of something like 3-4 million jobs just to get back to the old historic range when these records started getting established. So just, it's an interesting check-in. It's not a very advanced data point, but it's just a reminder of how very strong the labor market is in terms of a choice for those that want to find work. And the Fed Beige Book, there could be some interesting anecdotal stuff in there. I have to have a look at that. It's only out 8 times a year, so always worth looking at that one. And then in Ola's space, we have the latest weekly crude supply data up, U.S. crude inventory and fuel inventory data up later today. Reminder, the OPEC Plus meeting tomorrow as well, and then that Friday, employment and earnings reports, especially out of the U.S., I think key for how we sort of finish this week and whether we're seeing a pivot higher in yields and all of the implications that might bring. Okay, with that, we will call it a day. And we will be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.